right. Don't you wish you could be Superman? That'd be awesome. To be able to turn time backwards. Now, I don't know about you, but for my money, Superman is spoiled. He's got way too much power, you know? His flying, able to turn the earth around. Mitchell, would it be possible for me to have you turn the spotlight off? Or at least bring it down quite a bit, maybe 10%, right on. That's much better. Let's get as much light as we can out there for you guys so that you can read your Bible and also keep track of the notes with us this morning. I do have a note sheet in your bulletin that you're going to want to pull out and make sure you're following along with me on, because we're going to cover a lot of stuff this morning and I want to make sure we're all together. I showed you that clip from Superman because the truth of the matter is that we all have to deal with change, and some of the most difficult changes we have to face in our whole lives are changes where we have to say goodbye. Now, we're in a series right now, this month, the whole month long, where we're talking about mastering change and what it takes in our lives to be able to confront the changes that come into our lives, deal with them appropriately, and maybe find some success or joy on the other side of those changes. I know that a lot of you are probably going through some pretty big changes around now. How many of you have money in the stock market? Yeah, that's a big change. I was watching it just the other day, and it dropped below 8,000 for the first time in like forever. And I thought, well, that's just crazy. Because wasn't it like 14,000 not too long ago? I mean, for crying out loud. The problem is I think people are afraid of change. And so they take their money out. They don't want to ride through the change. And so then all of you suffer because your money's in the stock market. Well, that's how it works. But I know that we've got all kinds of changes that we're facing. One good change is the gas prices have gone down. That's nice. I like that. But I wanted to remind you of the core principle for mastering change that we dealt with last week. It basically goes like this. See if I can get it up on the screen for those of you who are a little visual. Here it is. Every change is a crisis. Every crisis is an opportunity. And every opportunity is a gift. Just to remind you what that's all about, basically it boils down to this. Every time a change comes into your life, you've got a choice to make. It's a crisis moment. You have a choice to make. And some of the choices that you make are choices to go toward God or away from God. Choices to pick number A or letter A or letter B, and you have to determine which one is the wisest choice to pick. Or maybe it's a crisis where you have to pick to move into the future or to hold on to your past. You know, all of us face these changes and choices, and it creates a crisis in our lives. But those crises are moments of opportunity, because it means God is giving you the opportunity to choose the wise choice. He's giving you the opportunity to move into the future. He's giving you the opportunity to experience His presence. It's a gift that God is giving to us every time a change enters our life, if we engage that change in a way that honors God. Well, today I'm going to teach you the second core principle of change management, change mastery, and it begins like this. Every change is a goodbye. Every change is a goodbye. Now, what do I mean by that? Because some changes involve people, some changes involve stuff, some changes involve your job, some changes involve your money. What does it mean to say that every change is a goodbye? Well, let me just remind you of something. Human beings are designed by God as relational beings. He has designed us with the ability to relate to things, to relate to one another. And as a result, everything in this life is about relationships. Let me just give you a couple examples. Of course, we know that family relationships are relationships. I have a relationship with my wife. You know, it's a give-and-take kind of situation. I know her, she knows me. I talk to her, she talks to me. I love her, she loves me. It's a relationship, okay? I have a relationship with my kids. I have a relationship with other members of my family. There is that connection that we face. But I also have a relationship with my car. I turn the key, and it starts, usually. And when it does, I do something for it, and it does something for me, and we're good. I fill it with gas, and it runs. I change the oil, and it purrs. Not really, but, you know, I imagine so. And so I have a relationship with my car. I grew up in a family where we had relationships with everything. in our household. I have become an insane pack rat because in my family, everything was personal. I'm talking about our stuff. Our cars didn't have actual names, but they had personalities. There was the red car, and the red car was like my dad's car. He loved that car. You know how the car has become yours when the seat curves and shapes to your hindquarters. He had achieved hindquarter status with that red car. You know what I'm talking about. We also had the gray car, and the gray car we went affectionately by the name of the Stealth, because for many months we kept that car hidden so none of our friends knew that we had just bought a new car. So we'd drive the red car, and then when we would go out on a special family event, we'd go out in the gray car, the Stealth car. And so we developed this relationship with our cars, and never was it as strong as with our stuffed animals. My dad would make a point to always enter our room and to adjust the stuffed animals in our room so that they would be in the most comfortable position possible at all points in time. And so he would adjust them so they would sit up properly, and then he would talk to them, and they would talk back, and he would encourage my sister and I to build relationships with our stuffed animals. And so I brought one for you this morning. Oh, I heard someone go, oh, who was that? Yeah, bring it on. This is my Pooh Bear. 1978, I was given this Winnie the Pooh. And you'll notice he looks different from most Winnie the Poohs today. Because this Pooh, not only is he naked, he did have a vest at one point, but this Pooh was manufactured and sold during the brief period of time when Sears and Roebuck owned the rights to the Winnie the Pooh franchise, before Disney got them. And so, in 1978, I got a Winnie the Pooh that looked like this. He was my Hobbes, and I was his Calvin. He became alive. Is like the Velveteen Rabbit in yellow fuzz. And he has stitch marks right here from one of the 9 times my mom had to stitch his head back on. He has a hole right here where my mom opened him up to re-fluff him. He's got a scar right up here where my mom had to sew his ear shut. And he's got a mouth right here that's only partially there. It used to come from there to there. It's now only that long, and that's his second mouth. The eyes have never been fixed, and the nose has never been fixed, but Winnie the Pooh and I would go everywhere. I'd stick him under my arm, and I'd just go around the whole house with him like this. If any of you were here early enough, you saw my son running around the stage here with this bear under his arm. And the thing, though, is that when I went to college, I had to make a lot of goodbyes. I had to say a lot of goodbyes. I had to say goodbye to my friends. I had to say goodbye to the warmth of Southern California for the terrible, frigid, 70-degree below zero wind chill of Chicago suburb Wheaton. And I had to say goodbye, in some cases for forever, to very close friends of mine. You know, there are some friends that I haven't seen again from that day when I left for college. But I could not say goodbye to Winnie the Pooh. And he went with me. I took him with me. Because, see, we've got a relationship. I'm just going to set him right there so he's all nice and happy. You all right?
Yeah, I'm fine.
Okay. We have relationships with all kinds of stuff. And it's hard for us to say goodbye. And do you know why it's hard for us to say goodbye? It's because we've been designed by God to be relating people. We've been designed by God to have relationship as part of our core because He wants us to have a relationship with Him. And God is unchanging. God is eternal. God is forever. So He has wired us to have a relationship with something that is forever and eternal and unchanging. And that means every single time something changes here on earth, there is a part of us that is deeply aware of how empty and hollow and temporary all the stuff on this earth really is. Because we were designed for something forever. And when we come face to face with the end of something, with a broken relationship, we become aware of the fact that we were designed for something bigger. I want to take you to a passage of Scripture today. Last week we looked at Exodus chapter 14 and we saw how the people of Israel had just made it to the Red Sea. And God was going to lead them from the land of slavery in Egypt into the land of promise and prosperity in the land of Canaan. He was leading them out of slavery into their promised inheritance. And they make it to the Red Sea and they face a crisis. And so we looked last week at how that crisis was really an opportunity that then resulted in a gift because they walked through the middle of it. Literally, they walked through the middle of the Red Sea. That's what we talked about last week. But there's a verse in there that we looked at last week, but I want to draw your attention to this week. If you have a Bible, the second book in the Bible is Exodus. And we're going to be in chapter 14. And I've also printed a number of these verses on your note sheet. I don't usually do that, but today, to save some time, I did. But if you'd like to look it up for yourself, it's there for you in one of those red Bibles. I'm going to be looking at Exodus 14, 10 through 12. And so if you're there in the Bible or if you got it on your note sheet, would you just follow along as I read aloud? They're standing by the Red Sea, and it says, "As Pharaoh approached, the Israelites looked up. And there were the Egyptians marching after them. They were terrified and cried out to the Lord. They said to Moses, 'Was it because there were no graves in Egypt that you brought us to the desert to die? What have you done to us by bringing us out of Egypt? Didn't we say to you in Egypt, leave us alone. Let us serve the Egyptians. It would have been better for us to serve the Egyptians than to die in the desert.'" Now, friends, you gotta listen to this. You gotta recognize something here. Number one, yeah, okay, we can believe it is better for them to serve the Egyptians than to die in the desert. We can understand that. It's better to be a slave of someone sometimes than it is to just be dead, because at least you're breathing. Now, of course, some slavery, you might want it the other way around. But in their case, they said, "We would rather be slaves than be dead." And they think they're going to die here. Here's the part I want you to check out, though. Right before that, they say, "Didn't we say to you in Egypt, leave us alone? Let us serve the Egyptians?" No, they didn't. They never said that to Moses. They never said, "We're happy here being slaves." They were making bricks without straw. They were being whipped on a daily basis. Their babies were being murdered by throwing them into the Nile River. The Egyptians were incredibly oppressive to them. And they never said, "Moses, would you just leave us alone? We're happy here." They never said that. They said, "Get us out of here." They prayed to God. They said, "God, would you get us out of here?" And he did. He sent Moses to them. And they got out. And now while they're gone, they look back and they say, "Well, it wasn't really that bad. You know, I remember those hieroglyphics were kind of cool. And the Sphinx, that was neat. I bet someday people will pay money to see that." You know, they're doing something you and I do all the time. It's called nostalgia. Okay? Nostalgia is when you pretend the past was great because you know more about it than the future. You follow me on that? Nostalgia is when you go into the past in your mind and you remember some of the good things. And you drag them to the front and you say, "Oh, wouldn't that be nice? Wouldn't that be nice to go back to those former days? To go back to those times?" And I just can't believe they would do it. But then again, I'm guilty of it too. The summer before I got married, or the summer right after Jen and I got married, I was living in Peoria, Illinois, home of Caterpillar. Some of you have been in Peoria. Some of you know all about Peoria, and you know about the river area and how dirty and dank it was. And I moved away from Peoria to Denver, Colorado. Today, I'm nostalgic about Denver. But when I moved to Denver, I was nostalgic about Peoria, and Jen and I would talk all afternoon about how fun it was living in Peoria. Last week, I met a family that came here and visited us for the first time, and I said, "Where are you from?" They said, "Peoria." And I said, "Oh, really?" And I was all happy and excited, and they said, "Yes, we're glad to be out of there." And I was like, "Peoria's awesome!" And then they got me thinking about the fact that it really wasn't. Why do we do that to ourselves? Why is it so hard to say goodbye anyway? Why is it so hard to say goodbye to things? Why does our heart and our mind draw us back to the things that we've said goodbye and keep us afraid of saying goodbye to the things in the future? You know, I do a little illustration sometimes in my premarital counseling. So some of you have seen this before. This is Silly Putty. It's a mega egg with Bart Simpson on the front. I do this little experiment kind of thing in premarital counseling. So if any of you are thinking about getting married, you've already got the punchline this morning, and I don't care if I'm giving you the punchline. But anyway, here you go. We're going to say this little ball right here that I'm going to make into a ball is you. Don't worry, I'll make it pretty. As pretty as Silly Putty gets. Okay, this little ball is going to be you. Okay? And I'm going to take another little ball here, and I'm going to say this is anything else in your life. Anything else. So this is like your car, your job, your sense of identity, your awareness of your own physical body. You know, maybe a sickness or something would come in and be the change in your physical body, but this is anything else. It could be a person. And then this is going to symbolize the relationship. Okay, just a little stick. When you meet someone, what happens is the relationship comes into play, and it joins the two of you. It's the thing that joins you to your car. It's the thing that joins you to other people. It's intangible. We don't know much about it, but it's there. But every time you have to say goodbye to a relationship, every time you have to say goodbye to a person, say, for instance, you lost a loved one to death, and you have to say goodbye to that person, the truth of the matter is, it's not just saying goodbye to the person, it's saying goodbye to the relationship. And you stay the same, and what happens is that relationship is left dangling there with nothing to connect to. It can never connect ever again to that same thing, because that thing is gone. And you're left with a part of your heart and soul wounded and ripped. It's because God has designed us for eternal relationship. And the parts of us that connect with other temporal earthly things connect just as deeply, just as personally as our connection to God. And when those things go, we're left dangling. We're left hanging. There's a part of us that's broken. Why is it so hard to say goodbye? Because every goodbye is like a death. Every goodbye is like when someone passes away. And there's a part of you that is left unattached. Well, I want to share with you something, though. If every change is a goodbye, I've got some good news for you. The good news is this. If we learn how to handle goodbyes, we will be able to handle any change we face. If we can learn how to handle a goodbye, we'll be able to handle any change we face. I'm going to give you a couple questions here this morning. These two questions are sort of psychologically motivated. They're things that are just general questions to help you mentally deal with and process the issue of saying goodbye. But they've got a theological or a God understanding background to them. And so we're going to look at them just a little bit. And here's question number one. Anytime you have to say goodbye, the first question you have to ask to process that goodbye is this: what have I lost? Every time I do a funeral for someone, I'm talking with the family, and I'm asking them questions about the loved one that they've lost. And I always ask them to tell me stories of great times they had with that person. I say, tell me something that that person did that was just really funny. Tell me something that that person did that really cheered you up. Something that person did that lifted your spirits. Basically, what I'm asking them to do is to tell me all the things that are good that they remember about that person. Now, of course, it makes them feel better because then they're thinking about how fun it was to know this person. They're thinking about good things. They're laughing, all those kinds of things. And that makes them feel better, but that's not why I ask the question. I ask the question because I want them to be aware deeply about what it is that they've actually lost. When you lose a friend who's very close to you, or when you lose a loved one to death, there is a loss there. Loss of companionship. Loss of laughter. Loss of the smile that they show you. Loss of all kinds of different things. And every time you have to say goodbye, there is a loss involved. And so I ask you just to evaluate, where is that loss? What have I lost? And here's the promise. I believe this. It is that every time you can identify the thing that you have lost, you have learned something that God designed you to have. Track with me on this. Every time you can identify a loss, you have identified something or a part of something that God designed you to have. If your soul feels ripped because there was a relationship that is pulled out of you because that person is no longer there, that connecting point between you and them is something God designed for you. You feel a connection to their laughter. God designed you to experience joy. You feel a connection to just their companionship. God designed you to never be alone. You feel a connection to their sense of purpose. God designed you to have a sense of purpose. No matter what it is that you have lost in that goodbye, it reveals to you something that God designed for you to have. And here's the promise. If God designed for you to have it, then God has the power to bring it again. If God designed for you to have a particular connection, a particular relationship in your life, God has the power to bring it again. So you have to ask yourself, what have I lost? Because it's only in recognizing the loss can we identify what God designed us to have. Here's the second sort of processing question. The second question is, what will I carry with me? Every time you have to say goodbye, something is lost and something is kept. And you have to ask yourself, what is it that I'm going to carry with me going into the future? And here's my promise to you. Whatever you carry with you into the future will affect every future relationship that you have. I mean, from the most profound connection that is broken in death to the most insipid connection, like when you sell your car. Every one of the connections, every one of the relationships on that spectrum from there to there is a relationship that you experience loss and you carry things away from it. That's what nostalgia really develops into with stuff like your car. Your next car, oh man, I remember my old car had this air conditioning that would freeze you out. This one's okay. Or, man, I remember the old car. It got so much better gas mileage. Or maybe even the quirks. I remember the old car. You had to pump it 9 times before it would start. And then when it would start, you had to sort of rock in the car to sort of keep the gas flowing. But I loved that old beast. You know, whatever it is, we've got connections and stuff that flow into the past, flow into the future. We're carrying something with us. And everything you carry from a past connection, a past relationship, will affect your future relationships. I know there are some people who respond to a goodbye by basically getting into the next relationship as fast as they possibly can. And they voraciously search to refill their empty soul. They've recognized the emptiness because God designed them for forever, and they've lost the temporary, and now they're hungry again, and so they search, and they jump, and they voraciously go after the next thing. Have you ever watched a dog eat? Do they eat slowly? Like savor their food and, oh, that's good. No! The dog sees the bowl of mush and he digs into it. He goes after it. It's gone before you know it. And it wasn't that good. Have you ever tried that stuff? No, I'm just kidding. I haven't either. But I've seen people and I wonder. The dogs just, they go out, and that's what some of us do. We say goodbye and we say, there's no hope again. I'm just going to rush right into the next thing. Some of us carry the past with us by saying, okay, I had to say goodbye. I'm never letting that happen to me again. I'm going to protect myself and isolate myself from all other possibilities of getting hurt that way again. But you know the bottom line is? We were designed for an eternal connection. And when the earthly connections are broken, if we do anything with regard to the earthly connections again, if we try to reconnect the earthly thing, or if we try to protect our things, then it's not what it's all about. It's not what God designed us to be. God designed us that those connections would connect to Him and be forever and never be a goodbye again. So the third option that you can pick is to get connected with God. Nevertheless, I want to share with you some verses here that show the biblical kind of carrying things with us idea. Look at Exodus 13, verse 19. It's the same chapter, basically, the same story, but it tells us that Moses did something that fascinates me. It says here, Moses took the bones of Joseph with him because Joseph had made the sons of Israel swear an oath. He had said, God will surely come to your aid, and then you must carry my bones up with you from this place. Joseph, the man with the amazing technicolor dream coat, the same guy. He's the guy who went to Egypt first, became a high official, high-ranking official in Egypt, and was able to spare all of his brothers their lives because there was a big famine in the land, and Joseph was the one who had prepared to save the food so that people could eat. And so his brothers and his whole family went down to Egypt so they could participate in this grand harvest of food. That's how they ended up in Egypt. And then as they continued to live there, 430 years later, they end up in slavery. Well, here's Joseph, way before any of that happens. And he has told them, carry my bones. And Moses, it says, took the bones of Joseph with him. Now, I can't get past this without making a little allegorical application. And I'm just going to ask it to you this way. Are you carrying any bones from your past? You know, here's these people, okay? They're living in Egypt, they're slaves. They're leaving Egypt, and Moses goes, Joseph was a high-ranking official. He was embalmed. He was mummified. He was in a sarcophagus. He was probably underneath a pyramid, and his body is 400 years old. Moses goes, and he finds this sarcophagus, finds this coffin, or finds maybe the mummy out of the coffin, whatever he does, puts it on a wagon, and begins walking out of town. And the people are starting to follow him, and here's Moses dragging behind him bones from Joseph 430 years ago. I am convinced we do the same thing in our lives. You know, a relationship is broken, the thing is dangling off of our soul, and we're like, what is that? And we're dragging the bones of the past with us. Now, I want to let you know something, though, that Moses was not dragging these bones to connect him to the past. Because, see, Joseph had made his brothers promise something. Let's actually look in Genesis 50. It's printed here on your sheet. I've got it here for you. That's the reason Moses was carrying these bones is not for nostalgia. It's something different. Then Joseph said to his brothers in Genesis 50, I am about to die, but God will surely come to your aid and take you up out of this land to the land he promised on oath to Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob. And Joseph made the sons of Israel swear an oath and said, God will surely come to your aid, and then you must carry my bones up from this place. Do you see why Moses was carrying the bones? It's because the bones were a symbol of hope. You see, Joseph had said, God is going to come to your aid. And because I know that God is going to come to your aid, I'm going to make you make a promise today that when he does, you'll carry my bones to the promised land. He had no idea it would take 430 years, but he knew it was coming. He had a sense of hope. Moses takes these bones, he throws them on a cart, he wheels them out behind him. And so everywhere the people go, pay attention to this, everywhere the people go, Moses has right there promise on a wagon. He says, listen, folks, we are going all the way to the promised land. And I know that, and so I have brought the bones. Now, I know it's a little weird for you and me to think about that. It's a little kind of funny for that whole concept of dragging with you some corpse. But at this time, you know, this was a highly symbolic thing that Moses was doing. He says, we are never going to Egypt again. We take everything with us. We're bringing the bones. We're going to the promised land. Here's what I want to encourage you with. The core principle of change today is that every change is a goodbye, but there's hope with God. Every change is a goodbye, but there's hope with God. And these bones that Moses was carrying around with him were symbols of this hope. Look at some of these verses next. In Joshua 24, we read, and Joseph's bones, which the Israelites had brought up from Egypt, were buried at Shechem in the tract of land that Jacob bought for 100 pieces of silver from the sons of Hamor, the father of Shechem. This became the inheritance of Joseph's descendants. 480 years before, roughly, Jacob bought a piece of land. And 480 years later, the people of Israel returned to that land and they bury the bones. This is the question I want to ask you about that when you're facing a goodbye, when you're facing a change. Ask yourself, what am I dragging with me? And here's the point. If it is not a symbol of hope pointing you toward God, His will for your life, and His plan for your future, if it is not a symbol of hope, it needs to be buried. Once they reached the land, the bones were no longer a symbol. We're already in the land. The final act of this symbolism is to get them in the dirt. That's the part of the promise where the promise reaches its fulfillment. You got to get them in the ground. And friends, when you have to say goodbye, when I have to say goodbye, there's a large part of our soul that says, I want to carry that stuff with me. But we have got to say, if it's not pointing me to God, if it's not a symbol of hope, it's got to be buried. You know, we as people have a kind of hope that the rest of the world doesn't have. And I'd be remiss if I didn't make just this one point today. From 1 Thessalonians 4:13, the Apostle Paul is writing and he says about death. He says, "And now, brothers and sisters, I want you to know that what will happen to the Christians who have died. I want you to know what will happen to the Christians who have died, so that you will not be full of sorrow like people who have no hope. For since we believe that Jesus died and was raised to life again, we also believe that when Jesus comes, God will bring back with Jesus all the Christians who've died." Friends, I don't know what your goodbye is. Maybe your goodbye is something seemingly small, a situation in your life that is going. You know, you're selling a car, you lost a job, or maybe just something intangible like your email address changed and you're not really sure how to deal with that. I don't know what your change might be, but maybe your change is something bigger. Something reaching into the heart. There's a relationship, there's someone that you loved that now you had to say goodbye to. And so I just want to encourage you today that you can have hope. Process through these questions for yourself. What has actually changed? What have I lost? What am I carrying with me? And where is my hope? Let me say those again. Process through those questions. What have I lost? What will I carry with me? And where is my hope? See, when push comes to shove, this stuff has to make a difference in your life. That's why I ask the so what question every Sunday. What's the difference this makes in my life? Well, it doesn't make any difference at all unless you process the goodbyes well enough to handle the next change that comes along. And so any goodbye that you're currently dealing with, or any goodbye that you will deal with, has to go through this filter. What have I lost? What am I carrying? Where is my hope? See, God has built you for a relationship with Him that lasts forever. So I just want to ask you right now to think about a couple changes. Changes that God might ask you to make. I know for some of you here this morning, there's a part of your heart that's a little scared to give yourself completely to God because you're afraid of the changes He might ask you to make. You're afraid of the changes that He might impose on you, is how it feels. And so you're afraid of giving yourself completely to God because of those potential changes. You're not sure what you're going to have to say goodbye to. Friends, there's hope with God. He has designed you for relationship, and anything you have to say goodbye to is a sign of the better thing He wants you to say hello to. Maybe your change here this morning is just a past relationship or a past thing that you're sort of either nostalgic about, or you'd rather bring that back to the future and say, you know, I'm going to come that right, bring that right here and now, or into my future. I'm going to have that again. I'm wrestling hard to make the past happen again. Friends, it's not the past that you should have been connected to anyway. It's God. He's the one who provides the healing and the hope and the truth that your heart was longing for anyway. And so every time you look to the past to say, I'm nostalgic about that, wasn't that great, instead say, that shows me something God has for my future. And so right now, I just want to ask you to bow your heads with me for a moment. Just in a moment of quiet. And in your heart, say this prayer. Say, God, what is it that I need to finally say goodbye to so that I can say hello to you? God, what is it that I'm afraid to let go of so that I can fully embrace you? And say, God, can you enter my life with regard to these changes I'm facing or have faced? I'm going to give you a moment right now to jot down on the backside of your card something that God is leading you to, something that God is teaching you. Take a moment, you and God, just in the quietness of this space. Father, we just ask that you would remind us that though we have many goodbyes to say, that you're the one who can provide for us everything that our hearts desire, everything that we need. You're the one who loves us more than anything. Loves us so much you'd be willing to die for us. So Lord, we just come to you now and we say that we know this life down here is about goodbyes and it's about death and it's about frustration and it's about changes. But we know that you are alive and you offer us forever. You offer us eternity. And so we just come to you and ask that you would remind us of your eternity.